We've got a quick but huge announcement for all you diehards out there.
Get a cup of coffee, pull up your chair to the table, because of your support, your five-star reviews, we've decided to make Sell or Die content for you 5 days a week starting now.
That's right. Sell or Die is now a daily source of sales wisdom, strategies, interviews,
and much more. If you haven't already subscribed, already is now the time. iTunes, Overcast, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast, search Sell or Die. Tell a friend. Tell both your friends. It's the only podcast for selling diehards on the planet.
Just don't tell your competition.
Okay, I won't.
It was a black suit that had I had a lime green shirt and office red tie.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The
perfect.
Suit shined in
so
the sun.
It was like Christmas.
Yeah. I did. I totally look like Christmas.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time.
Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, the premier sales and personal development podcast. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I authored The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. Welcome, everybody. And Jeffrey, you're right. This is the premier sales and personal development podcast on the planet. Brian M. George wrote in a review, and guess what he said? He said,
wait, was this a five-star review?
It was a five-star iTunes review.
Okay,
and he
go
said,
ahead.
I've been listening for a long time and have tried many other sales podcasts to listen to as well. No other podcast stacks up to Sell or Die. The content, the content they bring every episode is amazing and well worth every minute.
Okay.
I love that. Now, guys, we need your help. Give us a five-star review, because the more five-star reviews we get, the better guests we can get on this show.
And the more money we can charge for advertising. So please, please, there you go.
No, but we want to bring you the best of the best. And we cannot do that without your help.
So before we bring on today's guest, Matthew Pollard, author of The Introvert's Edge, I want to talk about a couple of things that are on my mind.
All right. But coming up, we have a great episode, Jeffrey. He mentions that personality types don't matter. If you can sell, then you can sell, contrary to many beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
He alludes to the fact that he figured out how he was wired and he adjusted to make some sales. I mean,
He was wired to be an introvert, but he cross-wired and became an extrovert?
It's actually quite an interesting story.
Sounds like a story that'll spark people's interest.
And he wins the award for most resilience, best resilience on the planet. He took 93 straight cold calls. Well, I don't want to tell the whole story. You'll have to stay tuned to hear what he has to talk about.
So I wonder if he was mad that he didn't get to 100.
Yeah,
like, by the time you get to 90, you go, I just want to get to 100.
Dude, please tell me no.
But come
on. Like, I want a yes, but I really want to get to 100.
Do you know how many people would have given up after the fifth? Seventh?
Most.
I mean, how many people stay in it till 93?
So I want to talk about a couple of things that are happening right now.
All right, let's do it.
Jennifer has created a new child productivity process.
Whoa, you paused at child.
Yeah.
Just for our listeners, it's fat, not a baby, okay?
I thought we were getting a huge
No, we're not. There's no announcement.
You scared even me.
No. My 9-year-old daughter, Gabrielle,
yes,
is a procrastinator. She doesn't do jack shit without somebody poking her at least 4 or 5 times. So we've been using this program, Asana, to assign one another tasks and projects.
In the office.
In the office, yeah. So Jen had the brilliant idea to put Gabrielle on the project assignment list.
Well, let me explain my thinking.
Go ahead.
So last night I was thinking, I have one life. I don't have a business life and a personal life. I have one life. And why am I doing these scrappy little to-do lists for my personal life, but then making these amazing to-do projects that have like automation and really cool things going on with them mm-hmm. in my business life? Mm-hmm. This seems crazy. I was like, I just need to Asana or project manage my entire life, not just my business life. So once I had that epiphany, and it really was an epiphany, I decided, well, what are the things that I'm sick and tired of doing, like nagging people to do things like, hey, did you go to the bathroom this morning? Hey, did you go to the bathroom this morning?
Oh, baby, you're an egg.
So now, instead of me asking your wonderful daughter, who I really do love, if she's gone to the bathroom, she has created a task, which I wrote bathroom, and she changed to the letter P, and she checks it off.
I like it.
I love it.
And it's working.
So I got a notification this morning when she brushed her hair, Gabrielle, she brushed her teeth, she peed. It was freaking phenomenal. This is life-changing.
Yeah, project.
Yes, Doug, you're wanting
project management, time management skills, starting
that's
early.
That's right. That's right. And she's excited to check things off.
Here's the deal. She's already the master of the iPhone. So it's not like a matter of she doesn't know what to do or how to do it. She just, we got the program. She clicks on it and knows exactly what to do and how to do it. She is the iPhone mistress at nine.
So here's the deal. Tomorrow's the first day of school.
Yep.
And normally, when would she pick out her clothing?
The morning of the first day of school.
The morning of, or maybe even the nighttime before at bedtime?
Maybe.
Okay. She has already messaged me to let me know that her clothing is checked off and picked out.
Now,
so it's working.
Hang on a second. She doesn't message anybody. It messages automatically.
Yes, but she wanted to. She was very proud, so she actually sent me a text message to
cool.
Guess what?
All right, now, second piece of information that I want to discuss this morning. I got an email from a supposed guru. That all these people really are starting to piss me off. She says, eliminate PowerPoint from your sales presentation. And I say there's two things wrong with that. Number one, PowerPoint has already been eliminated by the word keynote. So you might want to go to the 21st century and invest in a
– or Google presentation.
Whatever. They're all better than PowerPoint. And secondly – the fact is that salespeople need the slide presentation to stay on point. Maybe she meant eliminate the marketing department's slideshow and create a slideshow that actually engages the audience intellectually and emotionally. But the thing that's missing from most PowerPoint productions or most PowerPoint presentations are testimonials. Why do you need anything other than you start your presentation out with voice of customer, you put voice of customer in the middle, and you end with voice of customer by handing the prospect a pen and say, sign here, press hard, 3 copies.
So here's the problem I have found with any sales kind of presentation that most marketing departments put together is that they start with this long history of the company, like everyone on the planet actually cares.
It. Right.
Like, here's how the founders met and came up with the idea, and they want to tell this amazing story.
Do we have a sound effect for snoring?
No, I just made one with my nose.
I just wondered.
But it's terrible because you're assuming that
it's a stupid waste of time. I challenge every sales team I've ever met that when marketing gives you a set of slides, send them back. Tell them to make 5 sales using them and then report their findings. And at that point, then you can use them.
I love it. I'm going to give you another idea,
diehards.
Record yourself on your computer with a screen share and the audio giving the actual presentation. And then play it back to yourself and listen to it as if you're the prospect. And I want you to challenge yourself on every single slide. Do I care about this? Is this something that's compelling, engaging, making me want to stay with you, salesperson, and making me feel like I should buy? And if the answer is no, you have the wrong pitch. And keep redoing it until you get there. Now, that's how I started. That's how I became a successful rep, is I didn't have like all these cool tools that we have now, but I would voice record it. I went out and bought one of those voice recorders and I would listen to myself pitch and I was like, wow, this sucks,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's how
most salespeople suck. And if you're listening right now as a diehard, you probably suck at presentation only because you've never heard it before.
Right. But I played it to myself probably 100 times with notes each time, fixing little things here and there each time. And that's what you need to do.
You can actually increase that. You can shorten the gap of 100 down to about 5 by recording the actual presentation in front of that prospect and hear yourself humming when the prospect says your prices are too high or I can get this cheaper online. I think that the reality of what the prospect has to say and how you interact are vital, critical points of your self-evaluation.
Oh, for sure. For sure. All right, you ready to get into it?
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Matthew Pollard.
All right, I am pleased to have here in the studio live
in person,
Matthew Pollard. Did I say it right?
Pollard. You did. You Pollard. Said it perfectly. Oh, you've been practicing beforehand.
I've been trying.
He's try to explain something. We would say Matthew Pollard.
Right.
Because that's how Americans talk. Matthew, however, is much more educated than we are, speaks much more sophisticatedly than we do, has an accent that makes us sound stupid.
Pollard.
Pollard.
Anyway, he's the author of The Introvert's Edge, and he's the rapid growth guy, and he is here live and in person, which is amazing. It's so great to meet you and have you here on our show, Sell or Die. Thanks for being here.
I'm really happy to be here.
By the way, for an introvert, he also does trade shows, gives
I'm not convinced he's an actual introvert. Yeah. Can you explain to me what, because I thought I knew what an introvert was, but I expected you to show up and be like shy.
I thought this guy
that
sat in a corner and didn't do, picked his nose.
I expected you to be more shy.
Well, I'll do that later, Jeff. So the thing you've got to realize with introverts, and I think this is where everybody gets it wrong. They're like, oh, an introvert means that he's quiet, he's shy. Well, shyness is something totally different. But introversion, the real difference is where you draw your energy. We were talking earlier about the festival I run, Small Business Festival. Jim Cathcart spoke as our closing speaker, close personal friend of mine. He's an extrovert. He and I both spoke and were in and involved in the festival for the whole day. The difference was at the end of that, he wanted to go down Rainy Street and celebrate and have some drinks and see the live music capital of the world. I wanted to go home into a dark room, put on the TV, and speak to no one for 3 hours.
Wait a minute. I might be an introvert.
Oh, no.
Jeffrey's always the person who wants to keep going and talk to more people, and I always want to go back to the hotel room.
It's funny that. It's the thing that we always tell ourselves is, oh, I must be extroverted because I can speak to people, I can network, I can sell. Yeah. No, you might be an introvert that has learned strategies for doing that really well, because sales, networking, presenting, they're all skill sets. Introverts don't see it that way. They don't see it as a skills gap. They see it as that they don't have that natural ability, so it's just something they can't do.
Or they learn to do it, but it's a little bit more difficult for them to actually perform it.
Well, it's interesting when you say that, because for me, I now actually really enjoy those activities. And while I can write and I can blog and I can do all of those things, I actually really enjoy dialogue like this. I really enjoy presenting from stage. I still get anxious when I go to networking events, but I actually enjoy the activity of networking. However, at the end of that, it's run its toll on me, so I also have to manage my energy, where an extrovert will want to do that and then they'll want to do something else. And they have their own disadvantage. They don't want to sit in the one room by themselves and write. We all have, you know, things to bear. The benefit as an introvert is we can learn strategies to go and do those things too.
So I'm going to throw something at you. Let's go back in history. Yeah. You know Miles Standish?
I don't.
Come on.
I don't. He know was who a that guy.
Oh, I'm from the other side of the world. Remember?
Yeah, but, I'm from here, and I don't know who it is.
Okay. Miles Standish was a guy who wanted to marry this woman named Priscilla, and he had no balls to go and propose to her. So he sent a guy named John Alden to do it.
Okay.
So obviously, Miles Standish, you're going to Google him?
Yeah.
Modern day technology.
Obviously, Miles Standish was an introvert who had no, he was shy or reserved or didn't have the courage to do it. Can you see it there?
Yeah, he was born in 1584.
Yeah. Okay, but.
And you don't know who he is?
I don't,
Oh, come on.
I don't believe this. I mean, look at this picture. It's black and white, and he has one of those big collars around him.
Well, okay, but, so he was definitely fashion conscious.
But the bottom line is, you reached out to me a couple of times to ask me to marry you, and I did not. I mean, in a way, you just wanted to come on the show or something.
Definitely.
And I didn't respond to it. So you got John Alden.
Mm-hmm,
Gerhard Geschwandner, to call me and say, hey, Matthew wants to come marry you.
100%. I think that one of the things that introverts struggle with is they tell themselves these stories about how that person doesn't like them. It happens all the time. I've got one introvert that he'll have a great conversation with somebody, then he'll get off the phone, send them the proposal, and then when they don't get back to them, he assumes that they don't like the idea or they change their mind, not that they just got busy.
You assumed after two shots that I wasn't
sensitive in sales.
What's that?
You can't be that sensitive in sales.
Exactly. But, you know, it's the same when I reached out to you. The first time you went, who is this Australian guy messaging me? And the second time...
Well, actually, we can't read accent on email.
Right. Well, it says Australian born at the first part of the program.
Gotcha, okay,
but I bet you I didn't even get that far, right? You would have got the message and it was in a pile of 100 others and maybe you got back to all of them. Maybe somebody else read them.
No, I'm a third-time guy. If you'd emailed me the third time, I go, wow, this guy's serious.
Well, that's the mistake I made. I got somebody else to reach out.
But that was amazing because we love and trust Gerhard, so then we automatically like you before we even meet you.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that a lot of people forget. They're afraid to ask their friends for introductions. They're afraid to ask for help. And introverts especially, I mean, we wear our hearts on our sleeves, so we're afraid to tell somebody we have a weakness.
How did you realize you were an introvert?
Well, actually, yeah. I think I've always known that I was an introvert, but I kind of fell into sales, and that was, oh my gosh, I'm an introvert and I've got to do this.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader in late high school. I was incredibly shy. I had, you know, in some of my presentations, I put up this photo of me at my sister's wedding, and I had acne all over my face.
I saw it on your website.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I do presentations, I put it up and then I take it down. But I think it's important for people to realize. I mean, in the book,
You could probably get one of those skin things to be a sponsor.
I probably could. Yeah. Well, Roaccutane was actually
the sponsor for me. Very clear skin now, just for the record, for those of you who can't see
him. Yeah, he looks
him.
Very handsome.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no problem.
For me, like I put a photo up of the way I was because people see me on stage and talking and they look at me now and they're like, oh, that guy's a natural extrovert. And I'm like, no, you've got to see where I came from. I mean, reading speed of a sixth grader, horrible acne, incredibly shy. I was afraid to talk to my own friends and be the center of attention, let alone speak to anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell into sales because I took a job at a real estate agent in their back office to find myself for a year because, I mean, I got in the top 20% of my state, but it was really hard with the reading speed of a sixth grader. I just didn't have the energy to go straight into university, so I took a year off. And so I took a job in the back of a real estate agent doing the data entry stuff, and my boss comes up to me and says, sorry, Matt, you're out of a job. The company's shutting down. It was just before Christmas. And just before Christmas in Australia, we take a month off. I mean, it's our summer and our Christmas break.
A paid month off, by the way.
Well, paid if you've got a job.
Right.
I was out.
So this is incredible. You get laid off before Christmas. You don't get laid off. Actually, you just get fired. There's no more.
Right.
That's it.
It's
done. So what did you do?
Well, in Australia, the only jobs you can really get around Christmas time. I mean, who's going to hire when people are going on a month break? So I found all these commission-only jobs. That was the only thing I could find in what we called the Green Glide classifieds back then. So I circled all these jobs and I called them up and it turns out they're all commission only. So I took a interview at one of them and I got put in the business team because I'm the only person that showed up in a suit. It was the world's most ugly suit, but that was it. Apparently there's also
Are you wearing that today?
Did you have acne still?
It was a black suit that had I had a lime green shirt and office red tie.
Oh yeah.
The
perfect.
Suit shined in
so
the sun.
It was like Christmas.
I did totally look like Christmas. And so I got the job. And after 5 days product training, I got sent out on this road. It was called Sydney Road. And it was like, this is like 1,000 doors on each side. And just got told to go and sell. And I was about to walk into the first business. And I had this realization, no one actually taught me that bit. I knew all about the product, but no idea what to say. So I walked into the first door, got rejected. The next door, I got told to get a real job. People can be lovely sometimes, especially when you try to close for the month. But it was 93 doors before my first sale.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm
okay, wait. Most people would have given up after the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 93.
But he was actually, what was happening is he was making the percentages of cold calling come to life.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, we all say sales is a numbers game, right?
Yeah.
And the truth is, while it is, I'd like to stack those odds a little bit. And that's why you should totally learn to sell, which is kind of the realization I had. I mean, 93 doors, I made $70.
What kept you going after the 10th or 11th one? I mean...
So I think it was a lot to do with, and, you know, attitude is key. In the way I see sales, attitude is 100% key. Mm-hmm. And for me, there were two things going on. One was that I really didn't have any other option. And I watched my father work 80 hours a week in a job that he, you know, kind of liked but hated the hours to support us. There was no way I was going to go back to my father after a day of working going, hey, it's too hard, I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was, okay, I've just got to keep pushing through, and I had to convince myself. And I think self-talk is one of those really important things in this
Agreed.
Process.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to convince myself, because everyone's heard the saying, you know, sales is the gift of the gap. You either got it or you don't. If that was true, my year was going to suck. So I kept telling myself sales is a process, one that I can learn. I've got to figure it out. And through that 93 doors, I can tell you, I didn't figure it out. I walked into that door and he was happening to look for a mobile phone, which is what I was selling. And then I sold him a landline package and an internet package, and I made my first sale. But when I walked out, while I was excited for about 45 seconds, I had this realization, I've got to do this for the rest of the year. And there was no way I was willing to go back tomorrow and do 93 doors.
Mm-hmm.
So I went looking for other ways, but I had a reading speed of a sixth grader. I couldn't exactly pick up one of your books or a Brian Tracy or a Zig Ziglar. It would have taken me a year to read it, let alone consume the information and apply it. But at that stage, YouTube was just starting to become more prevalent. And while a lot of people think it's just great for cat videos, I actually saw the steps in the sale and started to learn the process.
Cat videos and makeup, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, so I missed the makeup part of the memo.
No, and you left out slime.
Yeah, and slime.
Slime is a big
one. Sliming's the new thing, right?
Oh,
since Nickelodeon bought it out.
Yeah,
right?
Sliming is the new black, no doubt.
Well, for me, it was what I gravitated to. That was all I could do. So I watched the sales videos, and you know, sales is like climbing Mount Everest. Once you know how to do it, it seems easy. But when you're learning, it's as tough as nails.
It's a little cold on your way to the top.
It really is.
Yeah. In fact, your fingers fall off.
Exactly. And we were talking just before about the fact that you used to fly all the way to BNI in New York. And we were talking about how some people just aren't willing to put in the work for success.
Yeah.
And for me, I would sell for 8 hours getting rejected. And then I would go home and I'd study for 8 hours on the process, focus on one element, perfect that, and go back out and try it the next
day.
Wow.
Smart move.
So
no, it was, smart move.
That's amazing.
It's the only way I could do it. I mean, it was 93 doors, then it was 78, then it was, 45, and I eventually got it down to under 10 doors a sale. And, within
Way to go.
It's to me, and it was amazing to see how quickly I went from being horrific at sales, terrified to do it, to becoming, I got promoted 7 times in 12 months. I ended up my boss pulled me in about 6 weeks in. He just got the monthly sales report, and I was listed at the top of the number one sales performer. And this was a company that just happened to be the largest sales and marketing company in the Southern Hemisphere. Southern Hemisphere, Australia's pretty small, but the Southern Hemisphere is pretty big. So I was, he was blown away, and so was I, and that's why I got promoted so much. But the thing that I always tell introverts out there, and even extroverted salespeople out there, is while it's uncomfortable to learn sales as a process, as soon as you learn it, I mean, it's a skill set that you can use everywhere.
Everyone needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You need sales help. It doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. If your sales need help, it's time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn new advanced strategies to close your next deal. We've got hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting. It's like Jeffrey sitting there right next to you, helping you close your next deal. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge that you can actually use. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for a free demo. Did I mention it's free? Free demo. I like free.
Okay, so you mentioned BNI, and I was flying back and forth. I was very involved in a group. And, we had about 60 entrepreneurs or salespeople. And what I found with a lot of them was they were really good at their skill or craft. So if someone made cupcakes, for example, she was the best cupcake maker on the planet. But when it came to selling those cupcakes, she felt like she couldn't do it because she was a little bit more introverted. So what do you recommend to business owners like that, where they have their skill or craft, they're great at that, and they don't understand the sales part of it?
Yeah, sure. So there are a couple of key elements there. The first thing is that a lot of introverts especially, but I've seen it happen with extroverts as well, when they're selling themselves, because for the first time they're actually trying to put their own heart on their sleeve, is that they start trying to tell you, even if they're relating features to benefits, they're trying to tell you what they do and why it's so amazing. And what happens is the logical mind will try and will listen to that, and they'll say, yeah, I believe that, or I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. And this happens a lot in cold calling especially, where somebody gives you an objection and you hit them with all this logical fact. And what I always suggest is just tell a story. Right? When somebody is explaining, you know, what is it you do, you can explain what you do at the start and then say, let me give you an example. And you tell a story of a client just like them that had a similar problem that they had, or somebody that's similar to them, and assume the problem. And if you understand your niche really well, and you know, if you do that well, then you will be able to talk directly to their problem. And you give them an example of somebody that you worked with that you gave them the outcome. Stories have this really unique way of first disarming the listener, because it diffuses the logical mind, or short circuits it really, and you speak directly to the emotional mind, which, I mean, we've all listened to stories. I mean, if I was to tell you, you know, Goldilocks and the Three Bears, you'd listen to it and determine the moral, but you wouldn't say, hang on a second, sorry, Matt, bears do not have beds. They don't eat porridge. They don't have, you know, that's just not what
happens. I've never eaten porridge.
Well, I have.
let me throw this at you. What you have described, first of all, the sale is made emotionally, justified logically. Second of all, the gift of gab is one thing. The science of selling is quite another. So you can have the gift of gab and not learn that that's how I progressed. I had the gift of gab, but didn't understand the science of selling. Once I learned that, I was able to combine those two skills and really make it happen.
You do have the gift of gab, honey.
I do. I talk to everybody.
He does.
You know, it's funny though. The gift of the gab for a lot of salespeople can actually be a limitation. Mm-hmm. Because while an extrovert has an advantage at the beginning because they can naturally sell, because they can naturally talk, mm-hmm. and an introvert has a horrible disadvantage because, well, let's just face it, they don't. When they get to the sales process and they learn the sales process, they'll actually be an extroverted salesperson.
I totally agree. Too. And it's not a system. It is a process, or a process, as we say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Pollard.
The process.
Pollard.
I have to practice that. I've got to practice my R's as well, right?
Yeah.
When I say school,
you'll be fine
after
a while.
Everyone's like, what? But, you mean college?
But for those of you who are tweeting, for you diehards out there are tweeting, why don't you tweet this one? It's an expression I've had for a long time. Most salespeople are not willing to do the hard work that it takes to make selling easy. And what Matthew did is went home and worked. Instead of going home and be pissed off. Instead of slamming doors and telling his friends that this sucks and I'm not going to do this anymore, he actually studied what to do to win. Way to go.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, you did the same thing, though. I mean, you're an extrovert, which means you didn't need to learn the science of selling.
Oh, I did.
You did?
Yeah, I talked all damn day and didn't ask for the sale.
Haven't you seen extroverts do that? I've seen them in doctor's surgeries where they say, I've got 20 minutes, go. And they're still building rapport for the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, and they don't even get to what they want to offer.
Exactly right. Well, I mean, I find that though for introverts, if they're willing to do, and it's not a lot of work. I mean, the person that you just that talked about that was great at cupcakes.
Yeah.
She probably spent forever learning how to do that.
Exactly. Maybe baking cupcakes with her mom since she was 5 years old or 6 years old.
Well, I did a workshop at the National Freelance Conference in Austin. And I do this thing where, I mean, one of the things that I love about the sales process is that it breaks so many barriers. But realistically, if you have a strong unified message that separates you and an understanding of a niche, then it just makes it so much easier. And I was doing this workshop with people on how to do that. And I said at the end of it, who here now has a strong message that separates them from everyone else? And they feel so much more confident in going to articulate what they do, where they're not going to see it as a commodity and get put in that price box. 97% of the room put their hands up. And then I said, well, here's the sad thing though. I said, keep your hands up if this is more time than you spent on marketing since you started your business.
Yeah.
85% of the room kept their hands up. So that lady that struggles with cupcakes, my bet she's probably not read a sales book, or she might be like Brian Smith, the founder of Ugg Boots, you know, the Australian guy. So I interviewed him on my show and he said, I've never got more than 3 chapters into a sales book without throwing it down and going, oh, that just, it doesn't work for me, right?
Because it doesn't resonate.
He hasn't read your book, Jeffrey.
Yeah, pardon?
He hasn't read your books.
Well, no.
They're not willing to jump. They're not willing to push through the first part of difficulty because they love making cupcakes. Mm-hmm. They love the boots.
Right.
But they're not willing to do the little bit of hard work that allows them to lead their dream business for the rest of their life. And it really is. I mean, it was 6 weeks for me to go from zero to the best in the nation. But these small business owners, they don't need to be that good.
It was 6 weeks of you investing 8 hours a day.
She forgot.
And maybe even more on weekends when you didn't have your full-time job.
Exactly.
Get me started.
But the cupcake lady forgot about
how many hours that is.
The cupcake lady forgot about all the cupcakes that went flat and never rose, or the eggs that broke, mm-hmm. or the batch that didn't turn out well. She forgot about the trial and error of her early life and couldn't equate those to sales.
By the way, there is no cupcake lady.
Yeah.
But I just thought that would be a good example.
But listen,
it's a great story example, so I like it.
However, there was one lady at B&I when I used to go to meetings with Jen, a photographer lady whose slogan was, "We shoot your family so you don't have to."
She is amazing.
Well, that would definitely
Michaels,
get your interest.
If you're in New York City and need a photographer, is an unbelievable photographer.
Well, the thing she's really done, though, is she separated herself from everybody else.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So she gets people on the hook and people are like, sorry, what now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a good tagline.
Well, for me, I think, and B&I is great at getting people to do taglines. And, you know, I've got an interview coming up with Ivan, the founder of B&I. I just did one on the book, but I'm talking about differentiation in our next session together at his house. And one of the biggest problems that a lot of introverts, a lot of people at B&I have, is creating this, you know, 30-second infomercial mm-hmm. of what they do. And, you know, my mother was, you know, heavily involved in B&I, and, you know, I told Ivan it's what paid my school fees growing up. But her problem was, unless she got to do one of these dance cards where she sat down and did what she does for somebody for free, she wouldn't get any clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason for that is a lot of times one of the biggest struggles that we have as business owners is we come from this employment world where if we want to get a job, we have to define ourselves by the title. So I'm a copywriter, or I'm a bookkeeper, or I'm an accountant. And when you're trying to be your own business, if you define yourself by that, you've commoditized yourself, and then
right.
you only
and
have
you forget
price to
the
compete.
Bathroom's going to get dirty every once in a while, and you got to take out the trash.
A lot of people think, you know, B&I is not for them or whatever, but and that's fine. It's for some people, it's not for others. But I will tell you, the personal development you get just from going to that kind of meeting every week, giving your pitch to a group of people who are willing to give you feedback and be kind about it is amazing. I had one girl in my group who stood up. And on the first session, literally could not get through her 30-second commercial. Was like, my name is, like, you know, so nervous, okay? I guess you would define her as an introvert, okay? And so as the president, I quickly jumped up because I don't want anyone to feel awkward. And I said, okay, tell me your name. So she's like, well, I can answer a question, you know? And what do you do? And why do you do it? And who do you want to meet? And she just started answering questions.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward 2 years later, she was getting up there with props and things to show. And like, this is the before, this is the after, I'm so-and-so, and I will make your house the most beautiful house because I'm the best interior designer on the planet. And she evolved. But it's that practice.
I think what you define, though, is this is an innate skill introverts have. They are sensational at preparation.
Okay.
And they know if they have to go into an event that they're in control of, they will prepare. But with sales, networking, presenting, they don't know they can. So because there's the unknown factor.
That's correct.
Huh.
And I think the biggest hurdle there, I mean, because what you just basically stated is by the time that you finish doing – as soon as you helped her and she got it done, she could just naturally – it would just come off her tongue
mm-hmm.
because she'd prepared it beforehand
mm-hmm.
and she'd practiced it and she was then on track and she probably did it more amazingly than a lot of extroverts.
Oh, yeah.
But she didn't know she had to prepare the first time.
She became one of the stars. Like 2 years later, it's like, do you remember that time you stood up and could barely say your name? And she's like, I know. You know, it's amazing.
So, Matthew, you hooked up with Gerhard Geschwanner, who is focusing
hooked
on...
Hooked up in today's terms might not be
I'm
the
sorry.
Right
Yeah, it's
term.
Probably the wrong term.
You met, connected, and became friends with Gerhard Geschwanner, who's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
His MO at the moment is mindset.
Yeah.
Did you become involved with him because of that?
Well, actually, I was actually introduced to him through Judy Robinette, who wrote the foreword for my book. When I first got into town, she read an article I wrote for Entrepreneur, and she reached out to me because she was interested in some of the strategies. She'd moved out of corporate world and moved into running her own business. Mm-hmm. And she was struggling with the pricing conversation because she was an introvert too. And so I gave her a strategy for doing that. And she became a big fan of mine and I of hers. I mean, she's a wonderful connector. Mm-hmm. And she introduced me to him. And we've just been great friends ever since. There's outside a few weeks, we speak almost every Wednesday. So
wow.
we chat a lot. And, you know,
get to speak to Gerhard every yeah. Wednesday. That's bullshit.
Well, the thing is, I think he uses me as a little bit of his test subject because for me, the introvert that I was and everything that I do now, he's got this thing called mindset science, which he believes now, very similar to you, sales is mostly about attitude, right? So for me, he asks me questions all the time because for me, when I see a barrier, I've learned to assume that there's always an easier way around it. So I look for a system or I look for a strategy or I look for information I can synthesize to be able to perform in that area. And Gerhard loves asking me questions about how I do that.
Okay. I'd like to throw one other thing into this. You came to America at what age?
I would have been just about to turn 31.
Okay. And did you come here because you wanted to complain about things?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you came here because it had promise.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Australia is a beautiful country. But there's 22 million people. That's the population of Texas across the landmass of the United States.
Exactly.
Like, it's crazy.
Oh, man.
So the bottom line that I'm trying to convey to you diehards is Matthew showed up with a positive anticipation that he would be more successful here just because he put his feet on the ground. And you guys out there are bitching about the weather and you're talking about who got elected and who didn't get elected. My recommendation is follow Matthew's book about go home, study where your expertise is, get a better mindset around what you're trying to do, and then go out every day and do it even if your ass falls off. Is that fair?
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Okay,
so,
good.
One of the things that you brought with you was your past history of success being the top salesperson, going from not really knowing how to sell and being scared of it or whatever to being the top salesperson in your nation. So our diehards, you need to figure out what's your past history of success because that will help build your confidence. I'm sure that helped you when you came here.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got to have your stories. I mean, what I'm well known for is, yes, I went from nothing to being the number one salesperson in the nation, but then I was responsible for 5 multi-million dollar businesses in Australia. So I have a lot of those stories. So one of the questions I always get asked is, but I've got no stories. I'm like, what do you mean you've got no stories?
Yeah.
Like everybody has stories. The problem is that they haven't practiced them. The best example I can give you is that when people talk about how they met their wife or how they met their husband, at the start, when somebody asks you, it's kind of a little bit of a bulky story. But over time, it becomes this theatrical masterpiece because you get so good. You say this part, I say this part, and it just becomes amazing. And while they practice that over and over by telling it over and over, in sales, they haven't had the chance to really think, well, hang on a second, what stories work and how do I articulate them in the most successful way to embed credibility, value, and send a moral that I'm the only logical choice.
And not embellish them too much.
Well, most people don't need to when they realize what they actually did for someone. I mean, everybody's worked for a business where they've given a result and then they're going to business for themselves a lot of times because they want to do it their way. But they can still draw on those stories. They were still their customers that they worked with. So a lot of people really struggle with how do I find those stories because I've started my business today, now I have no stories. But they forget they have a lifetime of experience and a lot of introverts put up a company brand and because they want to hide behind that. Mm. And they forget that their personal themselves has a lifetime of stories they can draw upon.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. You may know me as the author of The Little Red Book of Selling or The Little Gold Book of Yes Attitude. What you don't know is I'm coming to Chicago. I love Chicago. And I'm going to help you learn more to earn more because right now we're in the biggest boom economy in a long time. And your sales are probably up, and you may erroneously think that you had something to do with it.
It's amazing. You are 100% wrong.
I'm not coming there to tell you how to have your best year ever. I'm going to help you have your best decade ever. Invest a few dollars in yourself. The dividends will last a lifetime. I'll see you there. So I'm going to give you the tip that was given to me by Elizabeth Jeffries, who doesn't claim ownership of it. If you want stories, go back and picture yourself in the house that you grew up with and or the house you grew up in and put yourself in each room of the house mentally and stories will start to pop. That's number one. Number two, I would add to that, go back to your original office, your original boss, your original customers, and put yourself in their offices or put yourself in their situation, and I promise you stories will pop. I promise.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, so many people don't realize how many stories they have. Derek Lewis, the guy that helped me, or my co-author with the book, he was my ghostwriter originally, and I turned his business from struggling to make about $12,000 to making just shy of $300,000 within a really short period of time. And I'm like, I want you to tell your story in the book, so
yeah.
Have the cover, share your story.
Oh, I saw him on your video.
Yeah, so yeah. Derek, I mean, he does this. We use this analogy of, you know, you've seen Wizard of Oz,
yeah.
Where he comes out from behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Several times.
Oh, yeah.
We use that analogy, right? So he comes out, and the reason why I wanted him to tell his story, and the whole book's full of stories, but his story specifically is he learned the sales process, and he made $27,000 in 2013, $12,000 in October of 2014, and then $40,000 within 2 weeks. $80,000 within 6 weeks, $120,000 by the end of the year, and then just shy of $300,000 the year after.
He changed his life.
But then he stopped using the process. He got confident and he started to go out in his own way. And all of a sudden, his sales plummets. He calls me and he's like, Matt, the market has changed.
Right.
The customers
are. Let's blame it on the market.
Right? So all of a sudden, this has happened. I said, Derek, are you still using the process that we came up with? Are you still using the same stories? Well, I might have changed a few things. He goes back to using the same stories and the same process, and all of a sudden, he's in Switzerland and London doing ghostwriting deals.
Wait, did the market change that time?
Absolutely. Almost overnight. Yeah. So the thing is that a lot of people, they move away from a process. But going back to the story element, as a ghostwriter, one of the biggest fears for people writing their own book is, I don't have any stories, and you write books that are all full of stories, so I'm not going to be able to work with you. What he finds is after about a 30-minute interview, all of a sudden all these stories come out,
yeah.
And he's like, this is three books, not one. But yet people don't think that they have one because they can't use a business lens to look at their life and realize that every story that they've had throughout their entire journey has a business application.
Wow.
Jennifer and I always talk about advice that we've gotten from our dads or our moms, and those are stories.
Yeah,
100%.
And those stories actually are the foundation for our success.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
That's true.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, I told you beforehand that my great-grandfather worked in a mining town in Wales, and then my grandfather was, you know, he was in the military and then came over here and worked in a factory, and my dad was the first one to get a degree. And while most people would think that that's just a great story of life, it's actually a story about how we build off our family's successes and mm-hmm. our family's journey, because I was allowed to do what I did because my father struggled mm-hmm. and got the first degree in our family. And that is a whole story about the generational gap, really.
And think about
it?
The opportunity you're creating for your future.
Yep.
100%.
Yeah.
Your kids are going to have it easy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope so. Got to have them first.
We have a tendency as a society to spoil the shit out of our children. I would tell you, oh, I was never spoiled. That's not true. I was spoiled.
I was spoiled. Yeah. I didn't act spoiled, but I was definitely treated very nicely by my parents.
Bullshit on that, but
I did not act spoiled most of the time.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
Any comment on that? Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. Just checking.
So you believe you weren't spoiled, and that's the important thing.
No, I believe
thing.
That my parents spoiled me, but I didn't act spoiled.
You know, I think I was spoiled where it didn't matter, but I wasn't spoiled where it did matter. So my father, I remember wanting my first computer as a kid, and my father said, you know, if you want that, that's something you're going to have to go out and figure out how to earn. And so I did. And I remember I've got a cousin of mine that was a partner in Accenture, and his daughter worked from the age of 14 and 9 months to pay for a first car because he believed that was an important thing for a child to learn, that money mm-hmm. actually has a value.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, in America, in Australia, in any first world country, really, we have a real blessing that we can supply our children with so many amazing things. Mm-hmm. But I think it's great parenting to decide what they do supply and what they don't.
I agree with that.
So what would you give – we have these diehards out there that are salespeople, and some of them don't want to make cold calls. Some of them have what we would refer to in sales as reluctance. It's like they don't want to make the next cold call and because that's where the next sale might be.
It's funny, isn't it?
So I've injected humor as part of what I use, but I'd like to know how you encourage people to stick at it and not quit.
Well, there are two things. There's a commitment to doing the work, and then there's a preparation element. For me, one of the things I used to always do whenever I started one of my businesses and whenever I hired somebody is I would book in their schedule and mine cold call time. Now, in Australia, BHP was like that client that everybody wished they had. So I would call it BHP time because I didn't know if the next person I called was going to lead to a sale with BHP. So for me, I think one of the most important things is locking in that time. Now, I suggested this to a guy that did gift bags for corporations. And there would be times where he'd be like, Matt, I've got no clients. I don't know what to do. And I'd say, book in this BHP time into your calendar. And things will change. Now, of course, we worked on scripting, and we'll talk about that in a second, but he booked that in, and then a month later, he'd be complaining to me, I've got too many clients, I don't know what to do.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, he'd come to me and be like, I've got no clients. And I said, have you maintained the BHP time? And he's like, well, no, I've been busy. So this is one of the things that we tend to do. We go from starvation to all of a sudden we're now overly matched with clients and we don't have time for selling. What we're actually doing is subconsciously avoiding it. So the first thing, I've got an article that I wrote for CEO Magazine, which says, dedicate 20% of your time to less stress and higher prices. Because when we get desperate, we then cut our prices to get our next set of clients and we get in this constant roller coaster. So what I talk about in the article is even in your busiest time, you deliver 4 days a week. You dedicate 1 day to sales and marketing activities. And I think that's a good philosophy to have.
This is sales gold. Whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, this is the common
thing. Or a convert.
This is common. This happens all the time with salespeople. They get up on that roller coaster of, I've just made so many sales. I beat my quota for the month. And they stop making the calls they need to make or the meetings they need to make. And then
and all of a sudden their pipeline's empty. Right.
Yeah, exactly. This is sales gold.
Well, I think that, I mean, so many people just avoid it, right? We especially introverts, it's an uncomfortable process. So unless it's locked in our schedule, and I say you can move the activity, but you can't move it out of the week.
Okay.
So if somebody calls you and says, hey, can you come and do that meeting? You're like, yes, I get to miss out on that. No, you can move that forward a day. You can move it back a day. But if you move it from the week, then you'll just, I'll do that next week. I'll do it next week. The second thing is to have a planned process. So many people, they'll get on those calls and then they'll say, oh, it's really difficult. And they've done no prep time. I mean, it's like we all go to these networking events, like the girl that you said went to this networking event, the cupcake lady, and didn't know what to say. Mm-hmm. She did no preparation. So she spent money to join BNI. She traveled there. She did all of this. She put all of this energy into it, but didn't know what to say when she got there because she didn't read a book on networking or read. I mean, Ivan's got how many books about how to network?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think there that what you're looking at, and this is a very important thing for you diehards. You're out there listening and you have to take your game plan all the way to the edge. You take your calendar and you mark the things that you got to do and you don't mark them out. You just move them over is what you're saying, correct?
Absolutely.
And when you get there, you have to be ready to deliver. Mm-hmm. If you're not ready to deliver, you're not going to deliver. It's just that simple.
It's exactly right. It's like somebody getting into the Olympics as a 150-meter sprinter and going, what was I supposed to practice running before?
Right, exactly. I have always said that there's no fear of speaking. It's just that you're unprepared.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I mean, I'm doing an interview with you guys now. And while people listening are probably going, there's no way he's an introvert. I mean, I did a presentation on Saturday and I had people's hands up, calling bullshit, I don't think you're an introvert.
Yeah.
And I said, what you don't see is the preparation I do beforehand. What you don't see
to give you the confidence.
Because for me, you know, I've got big events coming up in, you know, I'm speaking to an audience of 14,000 people coming up, 3,000 salespeople coming up for a large corporation. But for me to be able to do that, I have to first psych myself up, do a lot of self-talk to remind myself that they need me to stand at the front of the stage and tell them mm-hmm. these things. And secondly, I go through, because I know that while now I've done so many presentations that I know that I can't get knocked off by an odd question, in the past it was, I need to know what slide's coming up next every time because if I start talking about something that wasn't the next slide, I'm going to get concerned and it's going to knock me off my game. So preparation for me was huge, yet most people – think that it's something they do off the cuff, and that's just not the truth.
But how do you psych yourself up? Go give us specific strategies for other diehard introverts out there so that they know what can they do.
Well, I think the first and probably the most important step for all introverts is to admit to themselves that this is a skill set like any other. It's a skill set that they can learn. And especially for introverts, what they need to do is they need to say, okay, if it's a system, then it's about experimentation, right? So if you have a scientist that's working on the Apple Mac, and the first Apple Mac, they press the power button and it doesn't switch on, they go, oh gosh, I was never meant to build computers.
Right, exactly. Right? Exactly.
The fact is, if you have
I've had that situation happen several times, by the way. I've hit the button and
it didn't turn on.
Well, I can imagine,
may not be your skill set, Jeffrey.
It is not my skill set.
I guess that you're never meant to use a computer for the rest of your life.
No, I just Google. Well, actually, I asked Jen to Google.
No, he asked me how to do it, and I said, let me ask Google.
Yeah, well, Google's incredibly helpful. Yeah. The amount of times that I see people bringing phones into interviews now because they're researching the thing you've said to be able to follow up on the next question.
No doubt.
So you psych yourself out. Tell us how exactly.
So the first thing that I do is I have to believe that, for me, sales, an interview like this, is an experimentation. So for me, I have planned stories that I know I'm going to utilize. I have steps that I'm going to go through. And now that I've done it so much, it's less of a thing for me. But I used to, for a podcast interview, I used to look at the flow. When I'm going into a sales activity, I would know the steps and I'd practice the chapters. When I had my sales team, my last business was an educational facility. We had 3,500 business owners as students. But the sales script was 12 pages long. And everybody had to learn it before they walked out of the door, because what I found is the success ratio or the sales cycle would be so much shorter and the effectiveness of a salesperson would be so much quicker if they learned the sales script before they went out there. Hmm. So by feeling armed with the process, and you know, my book in chapter one, and which you can download for free off my website, in the book, I talk about a seven-step process. And I say, if you do nothing more than write down the headings of the seven-step process, record what you currently say, put that in. If it doesn't fit, then throw that out. You should not be saying that to a customer.
Or modify it to
a
point.
Right.
Yeah.
Change it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then look at where the gaps are. And generally, people have a huge gaping hole in asking the right questions and telling stories as opposed to just giving them lots of meaningless data. Yeah. Fill in those gaps. And if you do nothing more than that, you'll double your sales in the next 60 days. But there are two reasons for that. One is you've now got a process. But secondly, and this is a huge mindset thing, for me, I have a system that's external to me. So if a person says no, they're not saying no to me, they're saying no to the process, which is over here. And I say, which element in my experiment didn't work? And let me look at fixing that so that I have a better result next time.
Cool.
So you're taking the rejection out of it being personal. You're removing that. I love that.
Well, Brian Tracy talks about in his book, Psychology of Selling, that getting rejected is a similar feeling as feeling spanked as a child. And you have that feeling. Yeah. And it's the same as dating. Like, a lot of men struggle with approach anxiety when it comes to dating because that feeling of rejection is horrible. But the way to get over that is, A, to approach more people in selling or in dating, really. It works the same way.
Build up your female pipeline.
Yeah.
Build up your female pipeline.
I've never
right?
been rejected like that.
Well, maybe we're not
Jeffrey,
all as lucky,
you're very lucky
as pretty as you, mate. But yeah, it's really about making it external. So for me, I know if they reject the solution, there's either a solution mismatch or there's a sales pitch mismatch. But it's never something where I go, why didn't they like me? And I judge myself. And that means that my resilience is much higher and I can go into the next one like that one didn't happen.
There's an old story about a guy who stood on a corner of 34th and Broadway and asked every woman to walk by if we want to go on a date. And he would get rejected like 1,000 times a day, but had 5 dates.
That's like enough for the week.
I went to Brazil. I went to Brazil with that guy. He would walk up to every girl and ask, but he did. He had more dates than everyone.
Oh man,
so
that's amazing.
Let's thank Matthew,
this is incredible.
Yeah, but
thank
we're also
going
to invite Matthew back because he lives close by or relatively close by.
That'd be right.
And he's probably going to move to Charlotte anyway once he realizes.
He just doesn't know it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
most people migrate from one end of North Carolina to the other. But it's been a pleasure to watch you succeed. It's been a pleasure to look at you and say, okay, you landed here with basically you had a past history of success, but you've turned it really into a business that's helping a lot of people.
I appreciate that.
And that random act of kindness thing was not unknown to people. We just talked to Chester Elton about random acts of kindness. I've been preaching random acts of kindness for a long time, and you do it literally daily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to help a lot of people. I grew up watching small businesses die and families break up, and it happens a lot. It happened a lot in my area, and that's why I created a festival that runs. What I think we're running nearly 150 free events across America next week just to help people during National Small Business Week. I think that once you succeed, you should never forget where you came from. And because of that, I like to give back.
I would
Matthew
love to
is
be.
A great
if
guy.
You want to
this
do a random
so
act
genuine.
Of kindness, Matthew, you hire us as speakers because we're not going to do it for nothing.
In the meantime,
we really want to thank you. We thank you for coming halfway around the world. Landing close by and then showing up.
Oh, yeah.
You're very welcome, mate. I was very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You know, Matthew not only remade himself to be able to sell, but he also put himself in the best position to do that by preparing.
Yep.
I'm a preparation junkie, and I think that you need to look at Matthew's outlook and Matthew's determination that went into his preparation that allowed him to become successful as an introvert. He actually went against his own personality, against his own grain in order to be able to do this and has become so amazingly successful at it. He wrote a book about it.
Do you think this is a fair statement? Most people need to prepare 10 times more than they're actually preparing now.
Yeah, between 8 and 10. Mm-hmm. I think most people have their own crap and their business cards and their briefcase or brochure, some kind of bag that they carry with a laptop or a tablet, and they go to a presentation like they're prepared. Mm-hmm. They've spent no time studying the customer and what they could potentially need, what their strengths are, who their people are, who their customers are. I mean, it takes preparation to actually converse with a customer to where the customer says, wow, this guy's prepared.
Well, I'll admit something. When I saw you prepare for a seminar for the first time, mm-hmm. even though you've given hundreds, thousands mm-hmm. of them, I was amazed at how much time you took to prepare. And it made me realize how little time I was taking and how much more time I needed to take, seeing as though I had way less experience at it. I mean, and that was years ago, but I just remember this moment where I was like, wow, the best of the best. I mean, that's you, yeah. right? The best of the best. Take this time to prepare. That's a major secret to this because no one ever tells you in school. It's not like something you learn. Like, well, if you're going to give a presentation, you need to prep for this much time and this and get all this information.
Now, here's a sell or die confession.
Ooh.
Something that I rarely, if ever, do because
we need some music here.
Yeah, forget it. This is a story about what happened several years ago. Once upon a time, I learned about preparation and the importance of preparation by being caught unprepared.
Ooh, confession, I love it.
I lost several sales in the late 80s and early 90s because I was unprepared. I went in Mr. Cocky, Mr. Know-It-All, Mr. King of Sales, and lost the sale because I didn't understand enough about the customer, nor did I ask enough questions. I just went in and me'd it, like most salespeople do.
Diehards, this is major because he's never even told me this.
Once I learned that I needed to prepare more, I actually focused more on the preparation than the actual presentation.
Cool.
And I found that by doing it at least times five, like if I had an hour presentation, I would spend 5 hours getting ready. That allowed me to literally win more sales than I could ever have hoped for. Great. So there you go, diehards. Now, it's time for another five-star review, damn it.
Another five-star review. I love it. John Thompson says, by the way, John Thompson's in our Facebook group.
Yeah, but not the John Thompson, another one.
Well, he's the John Thompson
well,
to
I'm
him.
Just telling you, John Thompson has a much higher profile.
He's in our Facebook group, and he's a regular contributor. So, John, we appreciate your engagement with us. We love connecting with you. And he writes, "The approach to value first is something I believe in and promote to everyone in my company. Jeffrey is certainly my favorite sales coach.
Of course.
I like Jeffrey's authoritative style of presentation and his wit.
So do I.
Jennifer's insight and wisdom comes across authentically, and her viewpoint is different enough from Jeffrey's, which makes it a fantastic show. You'll receive my highest recommendation for all business owners and salespeople." Now, let me just preface his next comment. He's in commercial real estate, okay, guys? He says, "However, if you're a commercial real estate broker, I do not recommend you listen to this podcast nor read any of Jeffrey or Jennifer's books. What the hell does Jeffrey or Jennifer know about selling commercial real estate anyway?" Very smart. Very smart.
And a ding. Ding.
I love
that.
That's
what we say. Just don't tell your competition about that.
So, John is based in Atlanta, and you're doing a public seminar there soon. So, John, I hope to see you at the seminar.
Yeah, John.
It's just cgittimer, like I see you, cgittimer.com/Atlanta.
And see if you can bring Patrick Ewing and Allen Iverson to the show.
All right. So this week we have a great week, Jeffrey. We have a sales manager spotlight with Dan Shields on Wednesday. Uh-huh. We have Chester Elton on Thursday.
Ooh, love Chester.
And we have another edition of The Best Of on Friday.
Whoa. Hasta la vista. What does that mean?
That's Spanish for we're done.
Oh.
We're out.
Okay.
See you later, baby.
Come on. Sign up, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and we will see you tomorrow.
Au revoir. Sell or Die Hards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.